Okay, so basically, we are trying to assume if non-perturbative physics in QCD operates in a similar way in the quadratic gravity, and what this analogy will lead us. And then I will use a more specific approach to the non-perturbative QCD and try to make some sense about this analogy. And finally, it's a brief discussion about what kind of physics we can expect from this picture. So this is the 100th anniversary of general relativity, and it has a huge success to explain everything we know currently about gravity, a gravitational phenomenon in a wide range of scale. And so far, there's no evidence of gravity in the small scale, but people are trying to unify quantum mechanics and general relativity for decades. And to quantize general relativity, the first problem people meet is that GR is non-renormalizable, but from modern point of view, it's not a problem because it can be just seen as an effective theory. And then the Einstein gravity is just described by the leading order term in a derivative expansion. But this expansion will break down when we approach the M Planck. So for decades, people are trying to look for this UV completion of quantum gravity go beyond this scale. And these are very fruitful efforts, which many of this approach actually already go far beyond the quantum field theory. However, there was a very old candidate of quantum gravity. It's actually just stick with the quantum field theory, and it's simply just generalize the Einstein-Hilbert action with the quadratic term of curvature. And at d equal to 4, we only have two independent terms for this quadratic term, and here we choose them as the Weil tensor and the Ricci scalar. So here I don't talk about cosmological constant. So now we have bisymmetry can have this three term, and we have two dimensionless coupling and the one free mass scale. So here I just put this big M as a free parameter, because normally you may just think that is the M Planck. And in a moment, you will see the advantage of doing so. And actually, it's already in 1970s, people proved that for this action, it's actually renormalizable and asymptotically free. And renormalizability actually just comes from when you take this term seriously in the high energy, they will give you this 1 over k to the fourth propagator, and then these are enough to have a theory, which is UV, to have a good control of the UV divergence. And so this means this two-dimensional coupling just has a log running as what we normally know in the in the gauge theory. And in particular, for this coupling of the Weil tensor term, you see it's always asymptotically free. And for the other one, we can look at its one-loop beta function just for the ratio of the coupling. And when the ratio is within this range, they will be attracted to this UV fixed point. So this theory looks pretty nice. And why it's not a UV candidate, a UV completion of quantum gravity? And the thing is that to have this nice UV property, you actually run into the ghost problem. So when these two-dimensionless coupling are weak, and you can see this ghost problem by just looking at the perturbative spectrum around the flat background. So here's the propagator with the spin 2 part and the spin zero part. And for the spin 2 part, we can just decompose this higher derivative propagator into two second order one. And here you notice that compared with the ordinary graviton Mathis pole, this massive pole do have a wrong side of kinetic term. So the interpretation of this wrong side actually depends on how you assign the I epsilon for the Feynman propagator. And in one prescription, you end up to say this wrong side corresponds to a negative energy of this state. So that normally will induce you will have vacuum instability, so it could be a disaster. And the other prescription is that you just interpret it as the negative norm of the state. But we know if you have an external state, to have probability interpretation, you should have positive norm. So if you just remove this state by hand, and then it will naively just violate unitarity because this state is actually mixed with other states. And among these two prescriptions, as we just mentioned, if you want renormalizability, you actually prefer this prescription, which can make sure, like, basically you can have a unified k to the fourth behavior, and you can do the wake rotation when you do the loop calculation. So this is a ghost problem of this theory, and for anyone who wants to take seriously of this theory, you need to solve this problem. And there's actually some solution already in the literature for this old problem. And so one suggestion is that you can just try to remove this ghost pole just by quantum effect. And the logic behind this is that this, when we're talking about unitarity, it's just about the asymptotic state. So if you can have some like dynamical mechanism which can remove this dangerous mode, and then you may not suffer from this unitarity violation, which you just read from this perturbative tray level propagator. And this actually has been studied like by referring to like large matter loop correction by Tan Bu in quite early time. But then he ended up with some conjugate complex pole, which still, whether that solves a problem, still under debate. And also some asymptotically safety people trying to using some anomalous running of the Newton constant, trying to remove the pole. And some more radical suggestion is that you simply probably give up some principle, like if you impose some constraint to remove this mode, and then you may like break Lorentz symmetry, or some people use different quantization, but then people just feel probably all of these are not convincing, and then they just say, let's just start from a classical action that has no ghost. But,
Should we mention that the first paper, maybe not the first, was Yang, is a group of United States 1974.
Mm-hmm.
He proposed quadratic inversion, and Yang knows.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's the 41st celebration.
Okay. Yeah.
61st
celebration of Yang-Mills. Okay. So yeah, actually, it has been proposed pretty early, I guess, this theory. Yeah, but I think Stella trying to prove this renormalizability, which is probably like a big step to making people to think about. Yes, Stella. Yeah. So, but let's just go back to look at this action for one more moment. And the asymptotic phrase says that these two coupling, they are asymptotic phrase, so they will get strong somewhere in the low energy scale. So here we denote this as lambda QG. And if this is bigger than this strong coupling scale, then above perturbative analysis makes sense, which say this theory is thick somehow. But the question is, if you just put this scale smaller than this, and then what will happen? And it's actually not difficult to think that when you have goes into this parameter space, you will have non-perturbative effect turn on, and then this perturbative spectrum analysis probably just misleading. So this leads to our QCD and quadratic gravity analogy. So basically, we will focus on this parameter region, and then as I will show you in the next few slides, we propose the ghost problem of the quadratic gravity might be solved by just making analogy with the non-perturbative QCD in the infrared. And we all know that QCD is currently.
So when you talk about the image of the scales, what do you imagine is that the lambda quantum gravity is what, the Planck,
that's M Planck,
and M squared is small?
Yes, actually, I will show the relation between M Planck. So the basic idea is that I just defy the theory in the UV, but M Planck is something like we observed in the IR. So we should somehow derive M Planck from this scenario. Yeah, and I will just show you in a minute about how the relation is go. Yeah, so basically.
Why did you put the analogy with Catherine Wick, there are no ghosts. So just because
you're taking the Catherine Strong. Yeah, yeah. So I think I should show you this. Yeah, let me just show you this, and then you can. I think so. Just yeah. Before going to detail, you may feel very confused, but I just here give you a brief idea about how this analogy goes. So you just see in the UV, they are both asymptotically free and randomizable, and so the gauge, this dimensionless coupling should get strong at some low energy scale. And now come to our important part for the analogy. So we know in QCD that you have perturbative ghosts if you just look at the UV action. But when you go to this infrared region, you find the gluon actually is unphysical because of this non-perturbative effect. So here, the analogy, and I will show you how this really goes, is that we hope the ghost pole can be also removed from the physical spectrum by the similar non-perturbative effect.
Are you going to address, I mean, some of us would say the theory is non-perturbatively, as I'm looking, which is always a matter of love. Are you going to address this?
Yeah. So I think that is like the Ostrogradsky instability when you look at the classical Hamiltonian. But yeah, I'm not sure like when you are in this non-perturbative region. So like in the rest of talk, I will just mainly focus on past integral point of view. And basically, I will just try. What's that?
The path integral will not exist, he says.
Why? But I mean, that is the just the classical Hamiltonian and the but well.
If you don't have anything further to say, you can just.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm just saying I will follow path integral point of view, and yeah. This is what I'm trying to argue. But another thing is that we know in the QCD, when you have this strong dynamics and we actually, in the very low energy, we actually have the theory just have this color singlet state, and which are described by the chiral Lagrangian. And we are trying to argue just you can have a good reason to think that Einstein gravity also can emerge in the infrared. And then you will come with this connection that the M Planck, which is associated with this light state, and is actually associated with this strong gravity scale. So, yeah, just let me show how these two things can happen. But before that, let's just briefly review the relevant things in the QCD. And we all know that the non-perturbative QCD is still far from solved. But for decades of effort, actually some general features are known. And also these have been studied from like quite different approach. And most reliable results are actually from the lattice data. But there's also some like continuous methods like the Schwinger-Dyson equation, Grabov-Coppi, and many others. They're trying to just provide the more physical insight to this big question. And so the fact we'll focus on here is that the gluon is unphysical in this infrared region. And the one way to see this is by looking at the propagator of the gluon. And it has been suggested in many different approaches that this propagator is suppressed in the infrared, such that there's no physical pole anymore. And traditionally, this is studied by the Schwinger-Dyson equation. And they just find different solutions regarding the behavior of this propagator in the deep infrared. And that's a long time that people that debate about which solution is more reliable. But actually, later on, it's that if you are doing gauge fixing on the lattice, this can actually open up the black box. And most lattice data is actually doing in this covariant Landau gauge. And they confirm this decoupling solution, which suggests that the gluon actually will develop a mass gap in the infrared. So this actually gives a picture that the naive infrared Landau pole, as you expected just from the coupling running, can be removed by this mass gap. So to be more specific, we can just parameterize this non-perturbative effect of the propagator. And here, we just focus on the pre-scalar factor of the propagator and just suppress the tensor structure. And the minus and the positive k square actually correspond to the Euclidean and the Minkowski momentum. And you would expect when you go to large momentum region, you just recover the perturbative propagator. But all the non-trivial things should just happen in the deep infrared. And here is the results of the lattice data about this prefactor. So this is just this prefactor and as a function of the Euclidean momentum. And so with this, we can just try to translate this as the explicit form of this Fk squared. And so this just gives us information about this Euclidean momentum region. In particular, the important thing is that in deep infrared, you have this constant behavior. So that means you will have this F function just to be a linear function of the K square and also has a negative slope. And to have this go, you finally want this to go back to the 1 in the Minkowski infinity. So you will expect a completion of this curve in this way. And that's also some lattice measurement.
Why don't we see that on the left plot, the f of k going to, I guess, negative and then positive?
This one?
Yeah, on the data side.
Yeah, so here you just translate, you just get rid of one over k squared.
Let's see. I guess you want to have a different sign of q squared? That's why.
Different sign of what? Of
I'm just going to say, I guess I'm very naive questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, the F, I should compare the two plots on the left and right.
So it's actually, this factor is fk over k squared.
Okay.
So it's a little bit like this region corresponds to here. So this region give you here. Yeah, and it's a little bit, yeah. But anyway, you just from this constant, you can see this fk squared has this linear dependence and in particular has this negative slope. And so the lattice data in Coulomb, that's also a study of lattice in the Coulomb gauge, which in Coulomb gauge, you just split the space and time, but still keep the rotational invariants. And here, the evidence is less clear, but there's still something suggests that you will have this different vanishing behavior of this prefactor here. So it, what is, which one? The red points, you mean here? I think this is, so these are results like with different flavor number, I think. But the different quark flavor number. So yeah, it's like pretty small, this different color line. But you can just see in one case, you get a more clear evidence that you just approach a constant behavior in the deep infrared. Yeah, so, and
so
now.
No,
momentum is here. It's going to a constant. It's a constant, right?
It's going to a constant of large k.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Oh, I can't.
I'm sorry. Yeah, this is the deep infrared, the small k region. And so the thing, so this is the part that people really, there's some debate about, and the lattice tell you it's a constant. So that means this propagator is a constant, approach a constant in the small k region. Yeah, so this suggests that mass gap behavior of this gluon. But just with this different results, it sounds like you have a different propagator form in this different gauge. So you will say it's just some gauge dependent quantity, why it's important. But the thing is that they actually suggest the same physical information. The information is that by looking at this shape, if I they actually violate the reflection positivity, which means and this criteria is actually related to whether you have the Kalman-Lyman representation in the theory. And so this means that in the infrared, you just don't have the physical gluon. So basically, that is it. By doing some analysis about this gauge-dependent object, you can probably still get some information about physics.
By unphysical gluon, you mean that in the IR, a gluon does not actually exist.
Yeah, that's true. It's not part of the asymptotic state. Yeah.
So does it say that like one of the gauges are better than the other? Because, I mean, F becomes negative in Landau gauge, and then Coulomb gauge is always positive. So sometimes Coulomb gauge is more difficult because it does have a reflection positivity.
No, so like for both cases, they violate this reflection positivity.
Yeah.
So. But yes, they have some difference about this shape. So it's not clear to say like which one is better, but like people probably this is a covariant gauge, so it's easier to do the simulation, or probably just people like to do that.
Some gauges are not good gauges in the
But I think in QCD still, I mean, some people trying to say the Coulomb gauge actually give a better picture about confinement. So, so I mean, probably it's not clear. It's not quite clear. Like in different approach, they seem to prefer different gauge fixing for to trying to give any this non-perturbative.
You think Coulomb gauge is a better picture of confinement or not? Or
in some approach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's also, F is positive.
Yeah, I think probably it's fine because the thing that the gluon is unphysical, so you don't care about this.
No, but I think it's important because if you have a gauge fixing that cannot be done, then I mean you're not doing the right solving the right problem.
Yeah, you're right. If actually I will talk about this about whether you do a right gauge fixing. So let's just come to the gravity part. And we just, at the first step, we just focus on this pure quadratic gravity. You just turn off that big M you define in the theory. And we study the propagator on the flat background. And similarly, we can parameterize this scalar factor of the propagator. And for the gravity case, yeah, because I suppressed the tensor structure, so the difference is that now you have this 1 over k to the 4th propagator, and you have this minus psi, which is actually closely related to that ghost problem we just see. And now come to my assumption. So our assumption is, yeah.
When you say pure quadratic gravity, you're leaving out root minus tr.
Yeah, I just focus on the quadratic. Just the two
Yang
quadratic terms.
This is what Yang did.
What Yang did, okay. Yeah. I think the pure case is like we receive more attention. That's true. So our assumption is that if we assume non-perturbative effect in quadratic gravity operates in a similar way to QCD, which means we just trying to use the same two possibility for this non-perturbative form factor, as found by in the QCD case, as suggested by the lattice data, and see what it will do to this perturbative propagator. And so, in this plot, plot A, you see if we use this form factor from what's suggested by the Landau gauge lattice, what you see is that. So this dot line shows this 1 over k to the 4th perturbative propagator. And then with this modification in the infrared, you now actually get a 1 over k squared pole and with a positive psi. So this suggests you actually, instead of the perturbative spectrum, you actually now just get a massless spin-2 state. So in this sense, we are saying that the non-perturbative effect may just possibly remove the ghost by the dynamics.
What about weak gravity?
Weak gravity?
We sit in a room with weak gravity.
Oh, yeah. So actually, weak gravity will be described by this pole. And I will go to the next slide to talk about what's the connection of this and like what we now know about this Einstein gravity.
So are you assuming g of k squared is the same as f?
Yeah.
Or are you computing g of
no.
k squared?
So at this step, we're just assuming. So
you're
I know.
Assuming it's the same as f.
Yeah, yeah. So it's quite naive. We're just assuming. But we are trying to see, like, just by assuming this, whether you can get just a sensible picture from it. But later, I will give some arguments, say why I can assume something like this.
So could you tell us, you're not going to tell us what g of k squared is. You're just saying it looks like that. You're not going to give us an expression.
If it's the same as f, then it
yeah,
will,
yeah.
That's all she's saying.
What? Did you give an expression for f?
So I got f. Yeah, so here, yeah, but so f is this. So I mean, I just multiply this f on the minus one level. Yeah, yeah, I'm sorry. So, okay, yeah, so this is that I use the fk factor from the Landau gauge lattice data, and this is I use the fk factor from Coulomb gauge data because they are different. And so basically the main point is the difference around this zero, like the infrared region, what's the shape's difference. So like here, it's like you have that linear k squared dependence. So this q1 k squared in the denominator. But here you actually have higher higher power of k squared in around this zero. So in this case, you actually has no you actually have a mass gap for this case, which means you don't have any propagating degree of freedom from the metric field. So this probably is a case more like QCD. But the point is that just by doing this naive analogy, you find these two cannot be physically equivalent. So and probably it's this case which is more interesting. So let me just focus on this one. Sure. So I mean, I already say like in this section, we just do this very naive analogy. Like we just assume the same form factor. But as I will show in this slide.
By the way, the form factor doesn't have to be the same. One particle, I mean, the balloon has a perfectly nice behaving kinetic there. The ghost doesn't have a nice behaving.
Yeah, yeah. So
kinetic.
Actually.
So there's no reason why the particle is completely
different. Yeah, I know. But so actually, let me first tell you what this implies, and then after this, I will tell you why I think these two could be similar. So basically, we are just have our argument based on past integral, and to say some non-trivial module will do something on this. But let me finish this, and then because.
Would you say in principle you could calculate this by putting quadratic gravity on a line?
Yeah. Actually, this is some question I want to ask for because I don't know whether you can really do that. And but I think the point is that if you really think this kind of thing can really solve the ghost problem, then probably this is something somebody wants to do. Yeah, that's true. So this is a part, this is a point that you in the infrared, because of this non-perturbative effect, you just get this massless pole, which describes an on-shell graviton. And so in this case, you actually just like in the QCD, you have a light pion in this strong phase. And then what you do is that you know this, like the symmetry of the theory, and then you expect the low energy theory is just described by a derivative expansion for this light particle. So yeah, what we're trying to say with this one level k squared pole you get, and also we expect the diffeomorphism hasn't been broken by the strong phase, and then you may expect this massless graviton is just described by Einstein's theory in this deep infrared region. And then in this case, this M Planck just derived from that form factor I just mentioned. And because in this theory, this lambda QG is the only scale, so M Planck is directly connected with this scale. Yeah. So it's like that could be something drastic going on.
What sense are we winning ground? Why are we winning ground from the usual problem?
What were your problem? You mean?
Something?
Yeah.
If
yeah.
We have an analogy with QCD, I guess we didn't have before. So.
Yeah. No, but I think.
Yeah, that UV, the theory is fine, and yeah, IR, yeah. It's not what you would expect it to be. Ghost is cured if this G of K squared does
yeah.
what you want it to do.
No. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the ghost problem, as I would like to interpret it, is that you can have it, and the difficult thing that if you interpret this ghost as an external or asymptotic state, and then you run into the problem. But here we just like break this connection. We're saying this ghost is just some perturbative mode. It's in some case, like in the high energy collision, that could be used to describe the physics just like the gluon. But then if you're assuming similar thing happen, you finally just have the on-shell graviton left in the asymptotic state. And then you do not have the problem. Like the dynamics solve this problem.
When the universe is small, right? Below the confine, it's still smaller than the confine. Or in fact, I do have below. There's nothing, there's a super star. What happens there? Why is the universe stable?
Yeah. So actually, I will, you also always ask a question that I probably will talk about. So in the some slides, I will talk about this implication, like in the early universe, it could be possible that if you can really have like some high temperature phase, and then you are able to probe this region, and then this instability associated with this cosmology may come in. And but I think it's not necessarily true that the instability is really not tolerable in the cosmology, because like the inflation can also be thing. So this is just the GR as the effective theory. So here you still see this quadratic term in the effective theory, but now they are different than the original quadratic term that I define in the UV. So it yeah. Mhm.
Between Nang's paper of 74 and something like 82, many papers published removing the ghosts.
Yeah. I know. I think like the Tambu, he started this.
They all turned out to be non-normalizable. This is why it has not gone anywhere in 40 years.
Yeah, I think I see those papers. I think they're talking about we need some non-perturbative physics.
They have non-lattice QCD, I guess. So.
Yeah, I think. No, but it's just like if we're able to use lattice to study this strong phase, and then that may just give us more information.
Yeah.
you want to do, mm-hmm. someone, do you have an exact claim that you have to be here?
I think it's just in the similar sense as in the chiral Lagrangian. I think this coefficient can somehow be constrained by the UV, the QCD Lagrangian, but it's, I guess it's just, sure. Yeah, I think it's just in the similar sense that this coefficient should be just encode this UV physics in some way. So it's true. So actually, we don't know. We just what we can say is just that we cannot have that two picture at the same time because they simply give the same that doesn't give the same physical information. But this is just a speculation, and it's true. You really need something more to fix this. But I think that the general message is that even in QCD, there's many approach which are gauge dependent. I mean, they're trying to find something from the gauge dependent quantity. So it's just like a hard job. So.
No, but the QCD does not create a universe if you don't control the dynamic.
That
right?
Doesn't work.
This theory kills the universe.
No, no, no. I think.
If you don't control the dynamics. And QCD is a perfect. I can take the weak couple of gauge theory and it's perfectly okay.
Okay, the point I think okay, the point I want to make is that the normal problem, this ghost problem people are talking about, all assume that when you have this massive massive ghost stuff, they are all in this weak coupling region. So only in that region you can think about this state as the asymptotic state, and in those case you have this problem as you just talked about. But what we're saying is that this problem is not a purely UV problem. Because when you talk about all this physical thing, you actually need to go to like the on-shell state. And then you will inevitably go to this infrared region. So we're saying this infrared non-perturbative effect could kill this problem. okay, I mean I'm trying to. So this is my.
So you're making it okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think to be fair, neither have you, I guess. Because the thing is that whether this is a problem for, I mean, very high energy processes, the fact that you have a ghost in UV but not in IR, it's not quite clear what sort of problem there would be. So it's not that you're going to make those particles that go off. Because they don't exist in the spectrum infrared. So there could be some pathology, but exactly what pathology would be.
Well, the picture's what she has right there. It's perturbative quadratic in the UV, it's Einsteinian in the IR, and there's something in the middle that's not well understood.
Yeah.
And this hinges on your G of K squared doing
mm-hmm.
what you need it to do, which has not been demonstrated.
Yeah, sure. So what I'm saying that because we know Einstein gravity in the IR, right? So we want to do any modification, we should end up something of GR with some correction. But yeah, that's true. Given this modification, we're just trying to give this kind of picture. And so we have a perturbative description in the UV. But this doesn't mean that, the implication of this actually, I think, really needs to explore. But I don't think it's not that simply that you're just saying UV theory is sick. So yeah, and then let's see the case if now we just turn on this original Einstein-Hilbert term at the beginning. And here I require this scale need to be much smaller than this strong gravity scale. And you may ask about the naturalness by doing this. So it's true that it's not protected by any symmetry. But here, I just assume that we don't have any even higher mass scale, and all the Bell mass terms like are all in this region. So I think this is consistent with our current understanding about like the standard model. And to find the analogy, we know in QCD, a small deformation the example is the light quark mass, and we know by adding this, you actually do not change the dynamics, but just induce the pion mass in the chiral Lagrangian. So we would expect this small deformation from this pure quadratic gravity may just modify the low energy Einstein theory in a continuous way. So we just ran into some possibility about how this could have, what kind of deformation it could be in the infrared. And so one possibility is that if you just do that naive propagator modification, and assuming that this G factor is not sensitive to this big M, and then it sounds like you end up with a massive graviton. But we know massive graviton actually has more degree freedom, and the longitudinal one will interact strongly at a cutoff scale much smaller than the M Planck. So it looks just quite different than the vanishing M case. And so far, we know there's no UV completion that can push this cutoff up to the M Planck. But we can imagine if there was any UV completion of massive gravity, and then this may imply that the M equal to zero picture actually probably miss some like hidden state which associated with this longitudinal graviton. But probably this manipulation is just too naive, because now you like you have two energy scale in the theory. So how exactly that will go is probably just more difficult to see. So the general lesson we will gain like from the QCD analogy is that we just reduce the derivative by two with this G factor. So this end up with the simplest possibility that this deformation just show up as a cosmological constant. But the thing is that you may already have one in the UV, and also it's still under debate whether the strong dynamics itself can induce some cosmological constant. And another possibility is that you can actually add a mass to the constrained spin zero mode for the metric field. And in this, if you add mass in this way, the graviton actually still propagates the same degree of freedom as the massless case. But the price to pay is that you need some non-local term to do this job. So this kind of action has been has been studied by some other people when they are trying to study the modified gravity in the infrared. I just tell you a picture about like by making this analogy, we may probably get this Einstein theory in the infrared and some perturbative description in the UV. But yes, as you already asked, how could you expect gravity be like QCD, especially in this non-perturbative region? And the short answer to this is that there could be some fundamental similarity between these two theories regarding the non-trivial matter in the path integral. So what do I mean by non-trivial matter? So this is what we know, that to defy gauge theory by the path integral, you just do it in the physical configuration space. And then Fadil proposed, suggest us that you can extend this to the full configuration space if you have a nice gauge fixing, and then you will employ an identity insertion. But the thing is that Gribov discovered in 1970s, like the commonly used gauge, they are well defined locally. But if you look at the whole gauge orbit, you will find that there will be this gauge orbit actually intersect with the gauge fixing plane more than once. So this is a Gribov copy problem. And so just take this into account, the FP procedure would be generalized, and the generating function now should reflect this Gribov copy problem. And so this is the number of copy. And basically, the thing is that when you have a very large fluctuation field, you will have this number of copy non-zero, and also the determinant of the FP operator could be vanishing or even negative. So it's this effect that's giving you this non-trivial matter. And yes, I mean, the normal common response to the Gribov copy is that this is just some problem of the gauge fixing. And we know this physical observable are just gauge independent. So why it has anything to do with the copies? But the thing is that, as you just see, if you really have a copy when you do some gate fixing, these are some effects built into the theory. So, and because now we don't really have a good analytical understanding of the non-perturbative QCD, so this could like just give you some hint about what the important non-perturbative effect should be. So yeah, here are some general property of Grabov copy, and basically the thing that you will see, this number of copy is vanishing within some bounded region of configuration space, including the perturbative region, and also this factor is scale invariant just from the Grabov equation. So that means it will depend on the ratio of the Fourier modes of the gauge field and the momentum. And so with this feature, we can what we want to do is to see how this number of copy effect in the module can just do the job to modify the gluon propagator. So the thing is that this effect will turn on at this unique scale of the QCD. And just by dimensional analysis, you can see this copy effect is will be important when you reach this critical value. And but the typical size of this gauge field is scaling this way. So the general information is that when k is very large, the correction is exponentially small. But when k is quite small, you just easily get a lot of copies. And so this will give you the suppression of this FK factor. And the analysis has been done in Bob's paper several years ago to really doing this counting in the Coulomb gauge and to see and then to have the implication for this factor.
So this is the gauge dependent statement, right?
Because, yeah, yeah.
So this is basically expanded, but you think it's a gauge fixing. I guess the question I was asking is not really gauge fixing because you have multiple.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. So it's that because in this gauge fixing, you really have this problem. So this problem will really modify the infrared physics somehow. So.
Right. And I guess my question is. So you said this has been calculated in QCD somehow, or not?
So actually, Bob had a paper on that.
But like, is this different in Coulomb gauge and Landau gauge?
So, so actually, I think it's for this explicit calculation, it's better to do it in the Coulomb gauge.
Okay.
It sounds like a Coulomb gauge gave a better picture from this point of view.
Well, I guess I just want to look qualitatively, does it behave differently in Coulomb gauge or Landau gauge?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's different.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But they both get big as you go to infrared.
Yeah, yeah. But just how exactly this grows is really depends on this detail. So yeah, that could be different.
In your property, the net of case correct application, net of case correct, you don't have any additional problems. Otherwise, you go ahead and get the size. So net of case
correct
must be an entire function.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, I think. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. So it's actually like Tambu, he recently had a paper on this, just focused on this entire modification, which is non-local. But yeah, yeah, it's non-local. But I think the thing is that because gluon propagator is unphysical, so sometimes people just argue whether you really need a whether you can have those like non-analytic property in the complex plane, they feel it's not very clear.
Mm-hmm. If you have a non-local theory, it's already probably finite.
But I think here yeah, that's true. I think people are trying to build in this non-local thing, like at the beginning, and then you can have just a finite theory. Mm-hmm. This is, but I'm not sure. Probably it's not easy to really calculate a non-local theory, because that will be a causality in that kind of thing, right? Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, I think probably I don't have much time. Yeah, but the message is that we can, for the gravity, the general covariance can be thought as the gauge theory if we of the gauge theory of the metric perturbation on top of some background. and the gauge symmetry, the infinitesimal gauge symmetry goes in this way. And so if we also can prove that it copies in the gravity, and then this non-trivial measure will come in. And in particular, you notice this measure, they are just depends on the gauge configuration space. They have nothing to do with this action. So it's actually from this part, this point of view, we thought there might be some similarity between these two quite different theories, just regarding that this non-trivial infrared effect could be similar from this measure. But the grip of problem is definitely very difficult, and there's actually not much study for the gravity case. And we, at the first step, we just study this infinitesimal version. So basically, we're trying to see whether you can find solution of this gauge, infinitesimal gauge transformation, which give you a vanishing determinant of the FP operator under some gauge fixing. So yeah, this, I don't have time to go into detail, but what we actually do find, like for the flat background, we get a picture which is quite similar to QCD, that in the perturbative region, this FP determinant is always positive, but if you go to some non-trivial, this metric field, you actually can have this solution. So it just gives some hint about we could have copy, but how exactly this copy distribute, it's still like a long way to go. So finally, let me just in last few minutes to talk about the possible physical implication from this picture. So as you already see, the main difference of this picture is that you have a UV region, which is asymptotically free. And then the most naive analogy with QCD that in principle, you can think about if you collide this infrared graviton and matter in the super Planckian energy, and then you may have a similar picture as when we collide the hydron. And the thing is that we expect the still factorization theorem. So you can separate this long wavelength non-perturbative effect and the short wavelength perturbative effect. But because all the particles interact gravitationally, so here the analogy that it's more like the hydron-hydron collision on the QCD. And now this pattern and hot process just described by the quadratic gravity, which has this 1 over k to the fourth propagator. And to really make any prediction, you also need something like pattern distribution function, and also something that you can calculate from the perturbative physics. But in principle, it sounds like this theory could be just as predictive as the perturbative QCD. But another different thing is that you may get black hole produced when you go to this super Planckian region. And people have done some calculation in the Einstein theory for different energy range. And currently, we are still not quite sure whether this calculation can apply to our case when we have this UV region. So if you have any idea, I'm very happy to talk with. And also for this cosmology case, the thing that if you can have a very early stage which are characterized by high temperature, and then you may probably have something like the deconfinement phase of QCD that which can be described by this perturbative quadratic gravity. But then it's true, you may need to worry about the instability problem just from the point of view to solve the equation of motion and to look at the perturbation. And so finally, if we really have this kind of asymptotically free gravity picture, one implication is that it's also motivated the matter sector should be asymptotically free, because like for standard model, we have this UV Landau pole problem. So if gravity is weak in the UV, this problem needs to be solved within the matter sector. So yeah, we have one paper working on this. But the thing is that when you are thinking about the matching between the matter coupling between two regions, this strong region effect may be just the order one effect, just similar to when QED runs into the infrared when it goes through the QCD phase. So yeah, so I think I already run out of time, so I just leave the summary here. And this is a very speculative idea, so I'm just open to questions. Thank you.
So is it possible to fix the gauge in a way that this NF is always zero, that you always have, you never intersect the gauge?
So actually, the mathematician Singer proved that under some condition, and you always have Gribov copy. But that it's true, like if in the actual gauge, you actually do not have copy. That's like what Weinberg, when he write his quantum field theory, he just used that gauge. But I mean, if you ask some other people, they will just say this gauge has its own problem. So it's like not clear whether you go into that gauge can really solve the problem.
So the statement is that you might have two different solutions, the two different field configurations that both satisfy the gauge condition,
mm-hmm.
but then can be transferred to each other by a gauge symmetry, right? So that's
mm-hmm.
the statement, right?
Yeah.
And you're saying the mathematician has proved that this has always happened.
But under some condition, he need to assume the gauge fixing should under some condition. So people will say there are always some crazy gauge that you can avoid this Gribov problem. So it's like the actual gauge I just mentioned. Yeah.
Why do most people fix the gauge at all? Why not just calculate always gauge invariant correlators and do the
whole pattern? Yeah, yeah. So I mean, just like in the lattice, normally people just calculate this gauge invariant quantity. But in this different approach of QCD, some just trying to using this. So I think the point is that because UV theory, you just, what will you want to do? You want to extract enough information from the UV theory, but like in the UV, you have this gauge dependent quantity, which is.
So what's the advantage?
So I think like for this propagator, there's one improvement called pinch technique, and they're actually trying to construct some gauge invariant.
I'm asking a different question. Uh-huh. So in your pattern integral, are you suggesting that just don't put the gauge fixing in the pattern integral? Because in the pattern integral, you show don't put the gauge fixing, just do everything.
But then, because gauge symmetry is a redundancy, right? You should get rid of those redundancies. This is the reason you need to do the gauge fixing. Yeah, that's true. So you're right. So in the lattice, this is like if you're in the lattice position, that's true. But when you're trying to understand from the continuous method, then it's not like you need to do that. You.
Or it could be that you explode the gauge using the very calculation, and then you extract something that's getting burned.
I think I think this pattern is not well defined if you don't specify it.
You have to nail down.
Because the information
is less to pull the time even without the gauge.
Yeah.
The volume of the gauge here is finite, you have a finite number of lattice.
Yeah, but that's only on the lattice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you overcount the path and go if you don't do it.
That's what you want. You overcount what? On the lattice.
And if it's a finite the integral, then I guess it's fine, probably. But I mean, I guess maybe then it depends on how you pick your lattice. Right? Of course, it will be that dependent. The cubic lattice, the triangular lattice,
I hope not.
That's true.
Have you demonstrated that this theory is UV complete?
Mm-hmm.
High energy.
Yeah.
You have.
Yeah, so we're saying like this theory, people say it's randomizable and asymptotic free, but they have this ghost problem. But we're trying to say this ghost problem is true when you really are in that perturbative region. When the pole you see by the tray level propagator is really in the perturbative region. But if it's not, then the dynamics may just modify the spectrum and so may just remove this ghost dynamically. And so you don't have really have this problem.
So this accelerator that
mm-hmm.
measures graviton matter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Has to be the size of the solar system or bigger.
What?
To get the Planck energy, you need.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This. No. I'm not suggesting.
Budget balance itself.
Okay. Let's see.
I'm not asking any questions.
Okay.
Yamin is the moderator, not me.
Thank you.